Welcome to the second part of our special Xbox 20th anniversary episode, as we count down the final of our 20 games that define Microsoft's first home console. Welcome to episode 21 of the Retro Gaming Dads podcast, the weekly podcast for everything retro and retro-inspired. I'm Phil, and tonight I'm joined by Barry and Anthony.
Hey there.
Good evening. Carrying on with our 20 games that we're going through. Tonight, what do we have first up?
Hopefully this 10, we're going to try and go for something not quite as violent as last week's. So to start it off, we're going to be punching other people in the face with the Dead or Alive series.
That sounded hopeful and then it went downhill.
That isn't that every podcast?
It is.
Pretty much. Yeah, the Dead or Alive games. I mean, this was the first console to have all of the Dead or Alive games available on it.
And to that point.
Up to that point, obviously, yeah. And they looked amazing.
Yeah, I remember the first time I saw Dead or Alive 3. Especially that stage that's set in like the forest and all the leaves are falling down. That just looked... It looked almost photorealistic.
One good thing about the Dead or Alive series and the original Xbox mainly was there's no microtransactions. So you had all your characters on the game at the very start when you got it.
Yeah, imagine that. All costumes available on disc.
Yeah, though there wasn't over 1,000 of them, to be fair.
Yeah.
Yeah, but who needs
that's
that many?
Fair point, but exactly. Phil probably likes having choices to dress up. We know
so
how
just
he is.
The girls up here.
Hey, and the guys. I always remember he used to go Zach as like a giant chrome plated Teletubby.
Hey, if you can't start
just,
a match by lighting...
Just so he could light up the little...
Exactly. You have to be able to start off a match by lighting up your head. Or your dongly thing in your head.
In all fairness, that's the highlight of his round against me. After that, he's just, you know, on the floor.
The
what,
other important
lights
one...
The dongly thing, that's it, he's sorted.
Yeah,
like
much.
An anglerfish.
The other really, really important one that you have to do at the start of the fight is as Genfu, you have to take off your hat and throw it.
Yeah, He's not even in the most recent Dead or Alive, is he?
And gutted. Absolutely gutted. I may be terrible with him, but I enjoy him as a character.
And isn't that what it's all about, having fun?
Oh, 100%. But now with the Dead or Alive series, obviously I know we've played quite a few around yours, Barry, when we come over for a games night. So was the Dead or Alive series one of your most played one?
Yeah, well, we've always hammered Dead or Alive since the original PlayStation 1, but Dead or Alive 2 looked amazing on the Dreamcast.
Yeah, but it really did.
It just literally took it to another level once it came to the Xbox.
I'd say Dead or Alive 3 was the first game where you looked at it and you really thought, wow, this is a new generation. This is big.
And that's going to be a theme with a lot of the games that we're talking about here. It's at the point where you thought, this is the next generation of graphics. And quite naively thought, how can it get any better?
I mean, even to this day, DOA 3 looks pretty good. Yeah, okay, you can tell it's you know not as pretty as the newer ones, but it still looks good.
Do you know what? On a good CRT, just because of the slight blur that it gives it, I'd say it still looks amazing.
Do you still have the disc? Because it seems like I'm bringing over CRT for when we're the games night.
Unfortunately, no. I don't have Dead or Alive 3 anymore.
Which is a shame. Because I also pre-ordered the Dead or Alive Ultimate package when it first came out.
Yeah, well, yeah, Dead or Alive Ultimate 2. It even came with the arcade or the Saturn version of Dead or Alive 1. I can't remember which one it was.
It was a definitive version of it either way.
I think Dead or Alive 1 was just the core game.
Yeah, but what I mean, it was the best version of Dead or Alive 1. They didn't really tweak it at all. The other thing that Dead or Alive Ultimate brought was online beat 'em up, online fighting.
I don't remember it being fantastic, though, just with the lag.
The lag?
Early days of online beat 'em ups wasn't great.
It wasn't great, no. I think there was a Guilty Gear that was online, and it was basically unplayable. But I had decent internet. I mean, I had a whole half a gig.
Whoa.
No, half a meg.
Oh, yeah, actually.
You were out by a factor of, like, what, 1,000 there?
Oh, God, yeah. It was half a meg. Sorry.
512 kilobits per second you had.
Yeah, sorry. It still was amazing internet for the time. So I didn't actually have too much. Like, it was playable, because I remember playing it quite a bit online.
No, I remember playing it at yours online, and you'd quite often where it go in slow motion, which for Dead or Alive was a death sentence to the attacker, because you had so much time to counter it.
It's true. It's very true.
But Dead or Alive 3, I guess for you, I think was one of those fighters that really stepped up his game when it came to the Xbox, and it really made a massive change for fighting games. I didn't really play many fighter games, and I don't recall playing Dead or Alive 3 at all, but I know it was considered to be absolutely fantastic when it came to the Xbox.
Well, I think the thing with Dead or Alive 3 was more that it didn't try to reinvent itself. It was more of 2, which had done quite a few changes to the first one.
Yeah,
prefer.
But better in every aspect.
Oh, absolutely. 100%. It was better in every aspect.
Especially on the graphical front. As we say, some of the stages, like fighting in the snow, and as you get knocked down into the snow, you're deforming and leaving footprints and trails as you kick the other person across the arena and they slide on the face. There's like a little trail where the snow has been flattened.
Now, there is one area where it is debatably not as good as the original, depending on your outlook.
I'm going to say soundtrack.
No, I was going to say physics.
So you mean the age statistic?
Yeah, that one.
Yeah.
Do you mean the year?
Yeah, Anthony's doing up and down motions with... are you pretending you're holding bags of sand there?
Yeah, bags of sand. I remember when you showed me that physics on the game, you were like, oh, look, Chet's Anthony, you're supposed to do this. And you turned the physics on, and it went from just staying still to literally bouncing completely up and down. Oh, what's going on here?
Yeah.
Poking eyes out on that.
Yeah, they weren't realistic, were they?
No, not at all.
Anyway, right.
But moving on.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the best beat 'em ups on 3D beat 'em ups on the Xbox.
100%. Totally agree with that. Now, the next one is one that we're actually going to introduce Anthony to when we all finally get together, because I don't believe he's played this one, and that's Phantom Crash.
Yeah, I think you may have played like literally one match of it, did you?
Yeah, I think we did try and give it a go. This is one that crashed, I think, whilst we were playing it. So I had a bit of a go. I had a bit of a play. And I was interested in playing it. Just unfortunately had a bit of an issue. But I know that Barry has got a recent copy for us to give it a go.
Yeah, I now have 2 working copies. Unfortunately, I only have 1 working Xbox. So see if we can get that. Either way, it's free play split screen, so we'll all be able to enjoy the fun.
So yeah, I believe you've been playing it a little bit as well to unlock some stuff so we can all make mechs.
Yeah,
a little bit.
Actually get some money so we can all customize our mechs a little bit. So the game is an arena shooter. You're put into a small arena and you shoot people, hence the name arena shooter. But you make these little mechs called Scoobies. It's quite a fast-paced game. It plays a fair bit like a watered-down Mech Warrior, but on crack.
Yeah, it's definitely more on the arcadey scale of the mecha games.
Yeah.
You two know what I'm like with mech games. And I'll try and play any mech game I can get my hands on. And I'm pretty certain you two are very similar in the same aspect of, you know, being able to walk around in this mech, you know, crushing cars and just, you know, wrecking havoc. It's all fun and games. And so I'm actually really excited to play this properly.
Well, I've been playing it, and it'd be nice to be able to face off against some humans rather than the AI, because you can trick the AI quite easily on this game. So what I've been doing is, every so often, health packs and ammo get dropped down. So all I do is camp out on them, wait for the AI to come. If you shoot the health pack, it explodes. It seems a rather bad design flaw in it, but all you do is wait for them to get it, shoot the health pack, take a chunk of the health out, and just absolutely mow them down with twin Gatling guns.
Well, with this, let's just hope that Phil doesn't optimize the fun of it.
Well, I'm sure he will, but as I said last time, I'll just pick on you instead.
Yeah, big bad double.
Thanks. You never know. I might actually give a fight.
So, from Mecha, we're going on from violence to a much more healthy pastime, vandalism.
Yes.
Jet Set Radio Future, possibly the best soundtrack in any Xbox game.
I can still remember the opening sequence soundtrack for this.
I can. Every time I see that logo come up on screen and hear the song start off, it gets me pumped up to play the game. Now, I really enjoyed Jet Set Radio on the Dreamcast, or Jet Grind Radio if you're from North America. This, honestly, it just wipes the floor with the Dreamcast original.
It was another one of these where it was just improved in pretty much every conceivable way.
Absolutely. Massive stages, multiplayer, a lot more verticality in the stages as well. I remember getting up onto roofs and grinding along roofs and telephone poles and telephone cables.
It really took the aspect of, you know, you'd have like a Tony Hawk's game, you know, with a skateboarding, but then this comes along and you can literally grind over anything you can see, and like you said, you'll be graffitiing all along walls, putting your tags out wherever you can do to score as much points to build up, you know, to complete, you know, whatever you're doing. And it really gave a different aspect to that sort of style of game, and it really took something that people used to, you know, used to doing with rollerblading, and just made it even more insane, if I'm honest with you.
Yeah, it was insane. You know, the absolute overreaction for putting a bit of graffiti onto like a shop shutter.
Yeah,
the spraying your tag. Next thing, a tank's rolling down to take you out.
You mean the police don't normally come and attack helicopters to take out punks spraying on walls?
No, that's definitely only a 2-star offence. It's only a 5-star that they come.
Hey, look, breaking law is breaking law.
But yeah, it's a brilliant game.
Yeah, but it looks amazing. It plays fantastic. I say the music is not my type of music, but oh, it gets me pumped up to play it every time I hear it.
Yeah. See, the most similar sort of game I can think of, though, that's in this kind of vein, that plays in a similar way, would be Sunset Overdrive on the Xbox One.
Yeah, that way you traverse you around the stage isn't too far off.
Yeah, obviously it's different in the fact that, you know, Jet Set Radio wasn't a shooter.
Well, yeah, but that's a start.
The grinding round, the levels, even a bit of tagging in there, even the general theme of it, the over-the-topness.
Yeah.
I'd definitely say the guys designing and building Jet Set Radio, designing and building Sunset Overdrive drew inspiration from it. You can tell.
Yeah. I've just had a really weird thought, and forgive me for this. On Overwatch, there's a character that skates around and can grind on walls and everything else. Is it Lucio? It now makes me really think of Jet Set Radio.
Because he wears roller skates.
No, just the way they traverse around. I don't know. I just kind of feel they took inspiration from that and put it to that. Because he's the sort of person I would imagine being in the game with his dreadlocks and everything else. Sorry.
I don't think I can, so I can't comment.
Okay.
Well, I think I can see where you're coming from, because he's also got the music motif going with him as well.
Yes.
Because a lot of his skills are all sound based and everything. So I can see where you're coming from. Not sure I agree, but I can see it.
People who play Overwatch and play the sim might see it, but just random thought it came out. But it was a fantastic game, and it definitely, definitely, definitely had a place in our top 20.
Yeah, I just wish that Sega would come out and re-release this game, because they've re-released Jet Set Radio, but they've not done Jet Set Radio Future yet.
Mm.
We can but hope.
Also, just on a slight tangent with this, I got this along with Sega GT, which was a fantastic Gran Turismo ripoff. Alternative on the Xbox. So these discs kept me entertained for weeks on end. Fantastic value for money.
Oh yeah, 100%.
Now that we've talked about a mech game, we're going to talk about another one.
Yeah.
Mech Assault. This is quite vivid in mine and Phil's memories as our first Xbox Live game, weren't it?
Yeah. I mean, we used to play online on like the Dreamcast and largely on Fantasy Star, but you didn't have voice chat on that. You just had text.
Yeah.
This is what introduced voice chat. This was a game changer for us. We had our headsets, we were there playing along, and we were getting questions from the people we were playing with. What? They have the internet over in the UK?
Yeah. Or it's like a tea and crumpets. Do you have tea and crumpets over there? That's the biggest thing I've ever heard from Americans.
You'd go into a game and they're like, oh, where are you from? You sound a bit weird. And you're like, oh, we're from England. And they're like, wow, England. You've got the internet in England. And you're like, of course we've got the internet in England. Like, whoa, how'd you get an Xbox? Did you come to the States and on holiday and buy it? Or, and you're like, I literally went to the shop around the corner and bought it 10 minutes ago.
Yeah, they had this sort of warped perception that, you know, there was no internet. England's a backwards place.
Obviously, everyone in the UK lives in, like, the Shire.
Pretty much. A third world country.
But we return the favour by blowing them up.
Yeah. How many times was it like, oh, you know, I'm from America, we have nukes. And you're like, so do we.
Yeah, that's nice. We have the codes to your nukes.
Somehow, I don't think you personally have a choice of targets with a nuclear weapon.
Oh, God, could you imagine if online teenagers had targets with nuclear weapons?
Yeah.
And you are so many thousand miles away from me. Why would I care?
But Mechassault, less arcadey than Phantom Crash.
Yeah, it's definitely the middle ground between Phantom Crash and full-fat Mech Warrior.
Yeah. It was kind of like a console-friendly Mech Warrior, if you will. But while you had less customization than something like Phantom Crash, you had your basic chassis, you could swap around your weapons, and it was just a fun... Again, it was another arena shooter, if you will. It was a fun game, though.
The single player had you doing missions, didn't it?
Yeah.
Well, when we bought the Xbox Live Starter Pack, I believe it came with only the online portion of Mechassault, didn't it?
I think so, yeah.
And one of the great things about that was, I remember when we got it, we went back to yours, we set up our Xbox Live accounts, you know, because you had semi-decent internet.
Yep.
It wasn't dial-up. And it was amazing that we could both be playing split-screen and online at the same time. That was amazing.
And it's something that's criminally underused to this day.
Yeah, absolutely. Very few games do it.
Yeah.
Well, I still remember doing four-player split screen on things like Halo and that. And, you know, think about to it now.
Not online.
Yeah, online.
Not on Halo.
Halo wasn't online.
No, Halo 2, sorry, man. Not Halo. Okay, so...
But yeah, having split screen online, some 360 games had it, but I don't think any Xbox One games.
I can't think of any. I really can't think of any.
Well, I don't know why they've kind of taken a step backwards, because you could get your friends around who didn't have an Xbox, didn't have Xbox Live, and just get online with the game with them instead of you playing and them watching you.
It's probably a ploy now to get everyone to buy an Xbox themselves.
Yeah, possibly. But then again, the couch co-ops been dwindling in recent years as well.
Yeah, as we found out with some games, it's more players online than it is in couch co-op.
Well, yeah.
Well, think about how often, you know, we have our games nights. I can't think of anyone else I know that has games nights.
Yeah.
With Mechassault, is it another one of those couch co-op sort of games?
It's not necessarily a couch co-op. It was just nice that our first experience on Xbox Live was split screen sat there, and we got to share that experience together, but online at the same time.
What, destroying Americans and their mechs?
Yeah.
Chatting to us saying, oh, we're going to nuke you.
Americans. Compared to Phantom Crash, how did it control?
It was similar sort of controls. Third person shooter, you know, you use 2 analog sticks and nothing special, but it was a fun little game.
Yeah.
I think the main draw of it was definitely the Xbox Live play.
Oh, yeah. I think without the online capability, it would not have done as well as it did. And this even got a sequel in Mechassault 2, which they just effectively refined the whole process. And you could even, I believe you could either get out your mech or you had a tiny mech that was...
You definitely had like a small exoskeleton mech. I think you could get into other mechs, but it's been, it's been best part of 20 years since I last played it.
Exactly, yeah. But I don't really remember it as fondly as the original Mech Assault. And I think it does come down to the fact that it was our first online experience on Xbox Live.
Yeah, I felt like Mech Assault 2 was a bit more clinical. It didn't seem to have as much character as the first game.
Yeah, I can get behind that.
Xbox Live coming to these games has made a massive difference because it was going from just being couch co-op to being online, and it was having the experience online. And, you know, we've chosen these because they were fantastic, and Xbox Live helped it be so much better.
Not only that, like, previous consoles had online play. You know, the Dreamcast had it, the Saturn had it, certain places in the world had it on the Mega Drive, and I believe the Famicom and the NES. So playing online wasn't actually something new. However, having persistent voice chat was,
yeah.
And that added an awful lot to it. Even if it was only threatening to nuke those Brits.
So onwards from mechs and killing.
To dragons and killing.
Yes. What a theme.
Yeah. So again, we've already said this. We're going to keep saying this. Panzer Dragoon Orta, when I saw this, I thought, how can graphics get any better? This is the next generation.
It's a very, very pretty game.
It did look amazing for the time it was. You know, it
looks amazing now.
Yeah, oh, you don't even need to say for the time. It still looks great.
Well, I actually shown Anthony a video of this about a week or so ago.
Yeah, he showed me a video of it, and just looking around and just seeing all the graphical effects that I put onto it. I know... your view is limited, so obviously it only rendered so much of what you see, but what they could put in your view, because they didn't have to do it, you know, think about, you know, if you go over there, we've got to render it. It really made them able to put so much in.
Yeah. Don't forget, though, you could look around 360 degrees, but they definitely used the power of the Xbox to show off on this game. And
oh, yeah.
It's a shame that this was the last Panzer Dragoon game that we got, like, new one, not including like the remake of the first game that came out not long ago.
Yeah, I mean, you had the not Crimson quite Dragon. As good Crimson Dragon, yeah, but it didn't quite live up.
No, Crimson Dragon, it's a good game, but Panzer Dragoon Orta, it's an amazing game. It's better in graphics, in gameplay, in story. I hate to say it, although a lot of people who worked on the Panzer Dragoon series worked on Crimson Dragon. It's not a worthy successor to the Panzer Dragoon series.
Yeah.
I think a big thing about Orta, which probably sits it that step above as well, is the fact that it just did not pull punches.
No. But at the same time, it was so satisfying finally taking down like a giant battleship or something, where it reminded me a lot of R-Type, where these massive bosses come in and you're just literally taking them apart piece by piece. Panzer Dragoon Orta had the same thing. You know, you're taking out turrets, you're taking out men on top of the battleship shooting at you, taking out the giant cannon, start taking out a couple of engines and it's starting to lose altitude. And even as it's crashing, you're still hammering it. You're not letting it hit the ground in one piece.
There's been quite a few games that have used this similar sort of game style, I feel. You know, there was Crimson Dragon, I think, wasn't Divinity 2 wasn't in that as well? If you did play it or
I
not.
I don't know, I haven't played that game.
Oh, okay. It's one where you can shapeshift into a dragon, and it has some particular things, again, where you can fly, and the aim changes and you hit different targets.
But this type of gameplay, it's not even anything new. You know, you've got games like Space Harrier back in the 80s that were the same sort of gameplay.
It is ultimately, any way you dress it up and make it pretty, it's an on-rail shooter.
Mm. It is.
Though, it's...
Oh God, it's an amazing one.
Well, yeah, there is an absolute special place for on-rail shooters. And even, you can even, some bullet hells, like R-Type, as you were saying, Ikaruga, etc., they're a similar sort of vein. They're not the same, but they are a similar sort of vein. in that you're avoiding all the shots where you're trying to take out the enemies, you're fighting the big bosses, while also trying to learn the patterns of the enemies and everything. They work in a similar way, even if, I'd say almost, the Panzer Dragoon games are possibly an evolution of games like R-Type.
I wouldn't go that far. Definitely say they're their own genre from just traditional 2D shooters.
Oh, they are their own genre.
Not just aside from it looking fantastic and the gameplay is great.
And sounding fantastic. It smells fantastic. It's amazing.
That's fantastic.
Just getting a bit weird
now. What have you been sniffing? The ability to be flying around on a dragon and fighting with enemies. I mean, come on. Who doesn't want to fly on a dragon and fight people?
How satisfying it is when like this horde of enemies come out. Yeah, you lock onto them
toast
all.
Them.
And just your dragon just fires this homing laser. It just wipes everything out. And it is a style of game that even, well, I say even now continues. The game I was going to mention was Res, which itself is like 20 years old. But there's still games that are the same sort of style, but Panzer Dragoon, the aesthetics of it, I really love the way, like, there's the armored dragons, hence the name Panzer Dragoon, but the enemies and all the cultures, and they kept it really consistent from the very first game through to Panzer Dragoon Saga and then through to Orta.
See, one thing, talking about Saga and the older Panzer Dragoons, they've always been, for their ages, good-looking, well-crafted games.
The thing with Orta is, it's not just good-looking back at the time. If this came out and this was a budget game, £20, say, brand new, you'd think, this looks pretty good for a 20-quid game.
Wait, yeah, you're right. You are right on that. Though, something that is possibly the biggest regret of my life is Barry getting rid of this next game. And on the the other scale of the spectrum, Steel Battalion.
We've gone from Phantom Crash, the arcadey mech game, Mech Assault, the little bit arcadey mech game, and now we're just going to the opposite end of the spectrum to the most simulation-based mech game we could ever hope to have, Steel Battalion.
I wish you could have played
absolutely
this game.
Yeah, you really do.
I really, really, really do wish I could have played this game.
Yeah, it was... It's difficult to call it a game. It was an experience.
It's an experience. Yeah. Absolutely an experience. The start of every match, you have to actually start up your mech in a particular order, and you get, in the instruction manual, a startup procedure guide, how to start up the mech.
And that does include flicking switches in the right order.
So you've got to close the cockpit. You've then got to activate the main power, activate the viewfinder, and you've got to do these all in order. If you do it in the wrong order, you'll either just
stall,
start up, or you'll stall.
So the next game that we're talking about, it's difficult to call it a game. It was more of an experience, and probably one of the biggest regrets of my life was Barry getting rid of this game.
Biggest regret of my life?
I don't know. Steel Battalion. Steel Battalion, what a game.
Yeah, so anyone who knows anything about this game knows its main draw is that it has a 40-button controller.
Yep.
That is only used for this game and its online version, Line of Contact.
And I'm so sad they never... Well, I say they never did another one. They did, but we don't talk about that game.
Oh, yeah, we don't talk about that one. The one that uses the Kinect. No. So, whereas Phantom Crash was absolute arcadey goodness in mechs, Mech Assault was getting... It's still a bit arcadey, but getting towards more simulation. This game is so hard into being a simulation mech game that if your character dies, it deletes your f***ing save. If your character's dead, it kills your character, it deletes your save. And the only proof you had to say that you ever actually got so far in the game is you can visit a war memorial and see your game save on a tombstone with it saying how many missions you ran before you got killed. And that's all you get. It's not like a roguelike. Nothing carries over to the next time you restart from the beginning. Nope. Just there's a grave.
I think one of the beauties of this particular game as well is when you was actually starting a match, you'd have to go through a whole startup procedure.
Yes, and if you got it wrong, you would either not start and have to start again, or stall and have to start the procedure again.
And never mind if you do it in the middle of combat.
Yeah, if you're unlucky and you stall in the middle of combat, you have to shut everything down and restart the procedure while you're getting like absolutely hammered by mortars, machine gun, tank shells, the whole lot.
But the actual beauty of the combat as well, even on the multiplayer as well, not just the single player, you could have the specialist mechs akin to like Chrome Hounds did, where you could have interception mechs, you could have artillery mechs and all that kind of stuff.
The amount of freedom you had in the game. So you could actually tune your radio into the frequency of the opposing team. So if you got close enough, you could tune in and listen into what they were saying. And obviously relay that back to your teammates. But playing it online, you can understand why, but people got really into playing this online. So a mech had come out of nowhere, hit me with like an incendiary round, set me mech on fire. I'd panic trying to find the fire extinguisher button. And the next thing you know, me wind wipers are flying back and forth.
Oh, but it is an utter shame that you still don't have this game.
Fantastic game. I'd say 40 button controller, I think it was. Two joysticks, analog stick for your camera on your gun. You had the pedals. It was fantastic.
I think it's one that you'd enjoy as well, Anthony, most definitely.
Oh, yeah. Do you know what? If I had the money, because Line of Contact is LAN play compatible.
Oh.
So you can still play it now if we could get free Xboxes and free copies of Line of Sight.
Oh, that's only like $600 to $800 quid.
Not that expensive, is it?
It's worth that money. Definitely worth that money.
Oh,
just don't die because it'll delete your save.
How many missions did you get? What was your most missions you got up to?
I actually completed the first game, but the war memorial was pretty full. Because the thing is, if you got just overwhelmed too quickly, sometimes you might not realize, you're like, oh, I'm getting hit, you know, it's shaking. Then the next thing, your viewfinder's smashed, flames are everywhere, and you got, they're fumbling with the little safety catch over the eject button, come on, open up, and then you've got to eject, but then you've got to eject out before your mech blows. You're like, did I make it? And it goes, you died. And you're like, oh, no. Turn the Xbox off. Turn it back on. Please let me save it. No, it's in the memorial. Damn it. But yeah, fantastic game.
So the next one on our list is probably on a lot of people's fond memories list for the Xbox, and definitely a game that defined Xbox Live. Crimson Skies.
Yeah, this is a game that everyone's calling to be reinstated back to Xbox Live, whether it's like a remaster of it. Have you ever played that, Anthony?
Crimson Skies, yes, because isn't there quite a few in the series?
It's based on a board game, and there was one PC game before it, but there was only ever one Xbox game.
Yeah.
Maybe I've not played the specific one, but I have played quite a lot of games that are similar to it. Because isn't it one of those where you fly around in quite old biplanes, really, and you have dogfights, and you do different missions than that?
Yeah, so it's set like during the 1930s or 1940s, I'm not quite sure. So it has that mid-20th century aesthetic to it. But it's almost like steampunk as well, isn't it? So you've got a lot of these antiquated technology, but also being repurposed to be somewhat more futuristic.
Yeah, it's a bit of a weird aesthetic. It's kind of like
it reminds me a lot of, have you ever seen the movie Rocketeer?
Yeah.
Yeah, I get that same sort of vibe from that as well.
Yeah, I can see where you're coming from on that, yeah.
But it had a really good single player mode, but multiplayer was definitely the big draw of this. And the great thing about it was the kind of game where you could just jump into it, get a couple of kills. You didn't feel completely useless. If you could just get behind someone, you've got a good chance of taking them down.
Yeah. And it is widely regarded as one of the best Xbox Live games from the generation. Understandably so as well.
I was playing a game recently called War Thunder, and that's very similar to that way. There's a lot of dogfighting. And it's a style of game that I do quite enjoy. However, it's a style of game where you can easily get screwed over if you're not careful.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. So someone could be new to the game, and they could pick up a couple of kills just by being in the right place at the right time.
Yes.
Yeah.
But once you get good at it, you know, some of the dogfights, they can get pretty tense.
Because quite often you're there, you're both trying to do the tight turns, trying to really keep close, and it's, you know, sometimes you can be flying behind someone, you're like, okay, the aim is lining up, and then they disappear, you're like, where they gone?
Yeah, I remember that plenty of times, as they're trying to do what everyone calls a barrel roll, but isn't actually a barrel roll, I think it's called an Aerion loop or something, but as they're doing that, and you're trying to follow them, but you just can't get a beat on them. And your rounds are just whizzing past them. Definitely a really tense game. And one that, although it works on backwards compatibility on the Xbox One and Series X and S, it's just a shame that you can't play it online.
Yeah, I mean, how good would it be if Microsoft managed to bring back the original Xbox Live in some form or another and get these older games up and running again?
I just don't think they will.
Compatibility, the servers are back on too.
Yeah, I can't ever see them doing that, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's a shame, but it would be so good.
But there's still LAN capability, so you can still have some sort of...
Yeah, I can't remember if this game was LAN compatible or not off the top of my head. But if it is, then you can still play it that way, whether it's the original Xbox or the Xbox One or Series X and S.
See, I remember the original Xbox actually being really good for LAN compatibility. A lot of the multiplayer games were LAN compatible.
Yes, I think that drastically went down though once Xbox Live got released.
It did.
I suppose to say, how many games can you think of now on the Xbox that you would possibly be able to do a LAN game? So on the Xbox One or Series.
I think it's different
Halo
now.
Halo 1, Halo 2. Basically all the original Xbox games that have been backwards compatible.
Hasn't somebody managed to do Halo, I want to say it was Halo 2, LAN-gamed a Series X, an Xbox One, a 360, and an original Xbox all LAN together?
Yeah, and that's not by doing anything special. That's just connecting them all up to a Switch.
Yeah,
exactly. You need to be playing the same version of the game. So if you're playing Halo 1, for example, you can't have Halo 1 and one person have Anniversary and one person have Master Chief. It all needs to be that original Halo 1.
Yeah. I think the reason, though, why LAN games sort of petered off once Xbox Live really found its feet and then the 360 came along is because networks improved so much. It was easy to just nip around someone's house if you was taking your console and getting everything set up. Both connecting to Xbox Live.
See, I have a different thought on that. I thought it's because everyone was literally breaking their backs carrying Xboxes to the friend's house.
That too.
What? And being careful not to drop on a kid's head because it'll crush him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Well, at least you're safe. You know, someone comes to attack you, just throw that at whoever it is.
But it was definitely a great console for being social, whether it was on Xbox Live, split screen, long games. But if you were the kind of person that didn't have any friends, our next game might have been a bit more suited to your taste.
Absolutely. Yes.
Fable. I absolutely love the Fable series. And I didn't start with the original Fable. I started with Fable 2, but then went back to the original Fable. And I'm sad I missed it from when it came out. But it was my biggest step into the RPG world.
Yeah, it was. I must admit, when I first played it, I was a bit disappointed how it was an RPG. In my mind then, an RPG was random battles, experience, level up.
Yeah.
That was the old school formula, though. That stuck around for a very long time. It's around to this day, to be fair. I mean, games like Dragon Quest still use that same formula.
Yeah. Well, playing the original Fable, it was probably the first game I actually played where your character had like a morality system. I'd played other games where you could affect a morality system, like Black and White, oddly enough, by the same guys.
Yeah. Lionhead at the time.
Yeah, Lionhead, previously Bullfrog.
Yes.
But in typical Lionhead fashion, Peter Molyneux, he overpromised and underdelivered.
Which is a shame, because Fable, as good a game as it is, did suffer from the fact that so much was promised about it.
When I completed the game as well, I was surprised at how short it actually was.
Yeah. Definitely an issue with all the Fable games. They suffer from being very short.
I mean, I guess the way that I kind of extend the games is I just wander off and do other things which isn't the story, and it takes me ages to complete it.
Well, I pretty much 100%ed the original Fable, except one, which was talked about. It was something to do with a dragon, and it wasn't in the actual game, and I must have spent hours trying to find out how to unlock that mission.
Yeah, because you had some side things that you could do. Like, you could collect keys, you could open up special doors. You had to do things to open the certain doors.
Yeah, I was going to say, did this one have the doors in it, or was that just later ones?
Yeah, because I do remember there was one that you had to show how evil you were in front of this door by literally going and eating a chick in front of it.
Because, you know, it's like going McDonald's getting chicken nuggets. It's not that evil.
Exactly, you know. That form of evilness is to bite the head off a baby chicken.
Yeah.
Or if you want to get thin, because this had a very unique system where, I say unique system, it happens to all of us, and it certainly happened to us all over the past year.
Eat more, get bigger.
Yeah, eat more, get big. Which actually affected the way your character looked. Your character would get bulkier and fatter, or you could eat celery to get thinner.
Yeah. Has it worked in real life?
Oh, it was very quick to lose weight, wasn't it?
Yeah, literally. I'm just going to munch down on these 300 sticks of celery and lose weight.
That's it. You just have to just sit there and eat it. You don't have to wait time between it. You at least just shove it all in, and then you just go.
Well, that's what I do to maintain weight. I have like 6 beef burgers and then 1 stick of celery just to get rid of the weight off the beef burgers.
If only it worked like that.
Yeah, if only.
See, another issue I found with the game, as good as this game is, it was a bit too easy to abuse. You only needed one spell.
Yeah, Mana Shield.
Yeah, it was broken.
Yeah.
In all fairness, anything Phil can come across, he normally breaks.
Well,
in all fairness, I used Mana Shield. As soon as you get that, you can basically have almost unlimited health, can't you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. It's not a case of... In some things, I do optimize it a lot. Don't get me wrong. I will admit that.
This is a game where it literally gives that optimization to you on like a silver platter, though.
Yeah, I didn't need to optimize Fable. I just picked one spell, cast it, and just made sure it didn't go down. That's all you needed to do.
Going from a role-playing game where you've got a lot of moral choices to something completely different. A role-playing game where you have a lot of moral choices. Knights of the Old Republic. Yet another Star Wars game that managed to creep into our top 20.
I mean, let's be fair. They're all good Star Wars games.
Me and Phil like the Star Wars games.
Well, not even that. I mean, this is considered probably one of the best BioWare games there is. Mm. And rightly so.
I ran around with a double-ended lightsaber in this one.
Well, actually, out of all the Star Wars games, this is the only one I played.
Like, oh, is it?
Collectively
okay,
picked, yeah.
Good.
Never played Battlefront or Republic Commando.
Again, it was one of those that had the morality system in it, you know, where you obviously could earn your favour, lose your favour. With most games, I find it hard not to be good.
Yeah.
I don't know what you
do. It's always like, do you wish to kick this puppy? I'm like, if I
not
kick
really,
it,
no.
If I kick it, I get 1,000 experience. But if I don't, I get nothing. I'm like, oh, look at the puppy. I won't kick it. Unless there's an achievement involved, in which case that puppy's getting kicked.
Well,
yes, no, I'm with you there.
See, the good thing with taking the darker path is if somebody is boring you mid-conversation, you can just choke them.
Wait, so shall we throw this out now, okay? I guarantee Phil always went dark.
No, I normally go good.
Oh,
pretty much,
what?
If there's morality choices, I tend to lean towards the good side.
I'm surprised with that, I'm sorry.
I tend to go through these games, tend to do good first, and then replay them through, and just be the absolute asshole of the world.
I can't. It physically hurts me to do that.
The only game where I've not gone good the first time through is the Mass Effect series, and I think that's less because of it being a clear good-bad choice, and more because bad wasn't, you're a monster, you're an evil person choking people out for no reason. No, bad was, you're a badass, and no one's going to get in your way, as opposed to it being... Exactly. That's why I liked the Mass Effect series sort of spin on that choice. But Knights of the Old Republic, it was an interesting game in the fact that it felt like it was an action RPG, like it was quite an active combat system. But in reality, it was turn-based.
Yes.
Yeah, they've done a really good job at hiding that, making something visually happening on the screen at all times. So while you were picking what you want the next move to be, your characters, they're swinging like lightsabers around his head as if he's like Morris Dancer on crack or something. And it always looked interesting, even though really not a lot was actually happening.
With this game, I think they did a really good job the way that everything flowed together and it how, you know, the actions all just worked, especially for the type of game it was.
Yeah, it was. It was very, very well done. And it's something that to this day is still widely available. I mean, you can even get it on phones.
And a good thing about this game is it was one of those games where you did feel like you were exploring these areas. Something that Mass Effect also did pretty well.
Yeah.
Its spiritual successor, Jade Empire, was it?
Yeah, Jade Empire was... Well, I'm not sure whether I'd call it a spiritual successor, but it was definitely the same sort of vein of game from BioWare.
Yeah, I felt that was a lot more linear than Knights of the Old Republic.
Oh, I'd agree with you there. The combat was probably more action-y as well. It wasn't quite so turn-based in that, if I remember rightly. You actually pressed buttons, and depending on what you'd press, you'd do it at that time.
Oh, imagine that video game where you press buttons.
You know what I mean. If you pressed to do your fireball, you would do your fireball. You wouldn't cue your fireball beyond the two punches and the dodge that you've already put in.
Well, talking about our favourite games and ones where you do actually press buttons to do things in the game, our last title is Halo 2.
Now,
no one saw that coming.
No, nobody saw this
absolutely
one coming.
No chance. Not that we've been talking about online play and how well it worked and everything else. Nothing was leading up to Halo 2 at all. The fantastic follow up from the original Halo, which just made everything better.
This was also the very last game to ever be played on the original Xbox Live.
Was it?
Yeah, well, there was a group of people who got into a game and refused to let the game finish, because when that game finished, the original Xbox Live would end.
And I did not know this.
I can't remember how long, but I think they got the... You know, Microsoft said, oh, it's going to finish on, say, the 1st. And they were still playing this same game 3 or 4 days later.
Wow.
Just so the original Xbox Live would not go down. But
that's dedication.
Oh, one by one, they all started dropping off. I think someone had a brownout where the power went. A couple of Xbox consoles just overheated or crashed. And one by one, these players are dropping out. And they were just trying to keep it alive as long as possible.
That's funny.
To me, in Halo 2, was it Halo 2 where you got the super bouncers?
Yes. There was a few maps that you could do the super bounce.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's the one thing I remember the most, because it wasn't a hack or a glitch. It was something that was in the game.
Well, it was a glitch.
It was a glitch that people used, but it was amazing because none of them were easy to do sometimes. So quite hard to do.
Yeah, there was a super bounce on one of the multiplayer stages. I can't remember what it was. It was the one with a tower on either side and that little triangular archway in the middle. I remember that stage being pretty easy to do the super bounce on. Again, we've said this loads of times. It looked amazing. It ran really well. Had co-op in the main story, online multiplayer, split screen multiplayer, even had DLC maps. Which were, from what I remember, reasonably priced, wasn't it? Like £7 and you got like three maps.
I thought it was like £3 or £4.
It might have been.
I remember it being reasonable though.
Yeah, I remember it being pretty reasonable. You still had your land play, introduced destructible vehicles.
I remember with the destructible vehicles trying to get it down corridors and breaking parts of the vehicle to try and get it down.
Well, we used to do that,
like the Wraith, breaking off the two corners of the Wraith.
Firing off its little fins just so it was a little bit thinner so we could possibly wedge it through.
Or the Banshee taking the wings off the Banshee so we could get through corridors.
I think, though, the thing that really set this game apart, though, from everything else was just how well crafted everything was, from the stage design, the music, the way they actually used everything together. Like, my most memorable portion of the entire game is where you're on the Covenant capital ships. It starts off, you've got the song Blow Me Away by Breaking Benjamin starting, and it just starts with a bell dong as you're walking down these corridors. And then as you open up into the main area where all the enemies are and they're fighting in between themselves, the actual guitar riff starts and the heavy music actually starts as you're getting stuck in. And oh, it builds up so nicely.
The only part of the game I don't think was crafted that well was the ending. It's pretty infamous for its ending, isn't it?
Yes.
You fought your way all the way back to Earth. Earth's under siege. You're coming in, Master Chief, here to save the day, and it ends. And then you've got to wait another, like, 4 or 5 years to finish the fight.
To me, like Phil's touched upon with the music, the change to the Halo, you know, the menu theme and that, getting the guitar into it, and, you know, it wasn't much of a difference at all. If you listen to the two soundtracks side by side, there is barely a difference.
Oh, the volumetrics is amazing.
Yeah, the main theme, fantastic. As soon as you hear that, you go, Halo 2.
Yeah. The volumetrics is the best mix of it.
It was such a good mix that it even got put onto one of the Guitar Heroes.
Yes. Play it. Yeah, I remember playing that on Guitar Heroes, one of the DLC tracks.
But Marty O'Donnell's always been a phenomenal composer. What he does with music and soundtracks is just phenomenal.
Yeah. Again, the whole lot comes together. And there's so many set pieces within the game, especially in the story mode.
Yeah.
Probably the first one that comes to mind is going across the bridge in the Scorpion on, is it like the second stage or something?
Something
Sergeant
like that.
Johnson drops it off.
Can we just take a moment, though, to appreciate Sergeant Johnson? Probably the best NPC in gaming history.
Absolutely.
He took no and he just didn't care.
He knew what the ladies liked.
Yeah. Yeah, Cortana's there going, thanks for the tank. He never gets me anything. He's there with the chain gun on the back, isn't he? And he just like reloads and goes, oh, I know what the ladies like. and he's there explaining what you go do with the tank.
Listen up. The chief is going to jump in this tank, roll across the bridge, and blow up any inhuman son of a dumb enough to get between him and the prophet of regret.
Or the beginning, actually, at the beginning of that stage, I think it is, where he's like, they're repeating a message. Regret, regret, regret. What does it mean?
Dear humanity, we regret being aliens. We regret coming to Earth. And we most definitely regret the Corps just blew up our raggedy-ass fleet. Hoorah!
Hoorah!
Yeah, hoorah, and then get shot down. Get shot down, but that just makes it more f***ed off.
The game was just, to me, the pinnacle of the Xbox.
I don't think it was just you. I think it was most people who played it.
Yeah, most
pretty
people,
much.
But like, I still remember going onto the 360 and still picking up at some points, you know, playing that. But the amount of hours that, you know, not just me, obviously you guys also spent playing Halo 2 on the original Xbox, I bet.
A lot.
But with it, dual wielding.
Oh, dual wielding submachine.
That was a whole new aspect chucked in. You're like, oh, what is? And you're looking at what different weapon combos do very well. You know, you got dual needlers or plasma pistol magnum.
Yeah, dual needlers usually ended up with you dying, the other person going, ha-ha, and then them being full of so many needles that they explode and kill them after they've already killed you.
Yeah.
And following on from Halo 1's brilliant magnum, you could now have two magnums and then throw them away because they were terrible.
Yeah.
Yes.
What it was is someone said, we need to nerf the magnums. I think Bungie got a bit confused what they meant and just basically made them as reliable as actual Nerf gun.
Yeah, rubber bullets, that was it.
Pretty much.
No.
Well, and they replaced it with
the Magnum. Worked because obviously you can get tech shields of headshot them.
Yeah.
No, what you did was plasma pistol and submachine gun.
Yeah, submachine gun is a good weapon on that. I like
it. Was it
the battle rifle? It was the battle rifle, weren't
it?
In
BR.
Halo 2.
Yeah.
Or was it the DMR?
DMR was Halo 3.
Yeah, battle rifle. Right.
Battle rifle, yeah. So even nowadays on Halo 5, the battle rifle is one of my go-to weapons.
It is. It's a good weapon.
Noob combo.
What was that?
I remember the noob combo, everyone called it. Do you two know what the noob combo was? Do you remember?
I'm going to guess plasma rifle and submachine gun or plasma pistol?
No, plasma pistol and the BR. Could you plasma pistol him and then quickly switch to the BR and shoot the and just headshot him?
No, why
are
you doing
plasma
pistol submachine gun?
Do you not know? No, but that's what everyone used to call
it. The BR, the battle rifle, though, it's a pretty quick kill once the shield's gone down.
Yeah.
In all fairness, it was. That's... If you got a drop on them, it was pretty good at taking out the shield as well. You could take out the shield and kill them within the same clip.
Yeah, oh yeah, it was definitely a solid weapon.
Yeah, great weapon.
And can we just take a moment to appreciate how good a job they did remastering Halo 2?
Yeah, especially Blur Studios with cutscenes.
Oh, the cinematics. Gotcha. Hey,
just give me a Halo movie that looks like that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when you are first introduced to it and you're getting the Arbiter being stripped down and turned into the Arbiter.
Yeah.
That cutscene.
Not only that, the Gravemind one, because obviously...
Yeah.
I think Bungie's vision of what the Gravemind would look like was probably a little bit too ambitious for the original Xbox.
Yeah.
And it just looked like some sort of plant monster from Little Shop of Horrors.
Yeah, it wasn't rendered very well, was it? And so it was just like a blob.
Yeah.
Feed me, Chief, feed me!
But come the remaster, those Blur FMVs, it looks amazing. It's like its lips peel back and it's all flesh inside. Oh, disgusting. But amazing.
Well, even its tentacles, it's like peeling off.
And the level where you're on the traveling bridges, the cutscene there, it all looks so good. It is such
Charity and the fleet coming to start glassing the planet.
Yeah, that one.
Yeah, even on the original Halo 2, I remember the first time I saw that and thought, oh, I'm dead.
But I think we can all agree Halo 2 is deservedly remembered as being the pinnacle of Xbox.
Yes. It was fantastic. And I would say Halo 3 was better, but Halo 2 is definitely one of the best console first-person shooters.
Oh, yeah.
100%. You know, happily, straight off the back of my hand, if someone said to me, favorite Xbox game, go, Halo 3 will be straight away my answer. There's no question about that at all.
Well, that wraps up the last 10 of our top 20 Xbox games. So do you think we've given a good selection of titles?
I think it needs more violent titles. I don't think it's been violent enough.
More violent titles.
No, I think we're very tame.
Right, I'm just looking back through it really quick. There's only one game where you don't shoot or stab other people.
We've got at least one fluffy character, at least.
Oh, yeah, Conkers.
No, sorry, there's two... Isn't there two games where you don't shoot and murder other people?
What's the other one?
Burnout and Jet Set.
Burnout, you definitely kill someone.
You absolutely... those crashes.
Yeah.
You don't shoot people, you don't... Yeah, okay.
You may as well. I mean, you literally cause massive pile-ups and kill tons of people. It's probably most brutal of all the games on this list.
If you had these 20 games in your Xbox collection back in the day, would you be happy with this selection?
Oh, 100%. Without a doubt.
I don't think you need much more other than the 20 that we've just mentioned. Have those 20. I'm set.
No, it was actually quite hard picking 20 games, though, originally.
Oh, yeah.
Again, although this isn't an ordered list, I think these 10 are probably our favourite games. Not necessarily the best games on the console, but these are our top 10 favourites collectively.
I'd definitely say each one in its own way defined the Xbox.
Yes. And I think it's because it was one of the first consoles with a robust online system. But I have a lot more vivid memories of playing Xbox Live back in the day on the original Xbox than I do the Xbox 360 and the Xbox One.
I'd agree with that. I would agree with that. What I would be keen, though, to hear from our listeners is their thoughts on this list. Is there any games that we've missed? Is there any games that you think perhaps shouldn't be there even? What would your top 20s be?
Yeah, we'd love to know. Just let us know how wrong we are. That's what the internet's for. Well, that's it for this episode. If you'd like to see more information on anything mentioned during this podcast, you can visit us at retrogamingdads.co.uk. You can also support the podcast and get ad-free episodes at patreon.com/retrogamingdads. We've been the Retro Gaming Dads, and we'll see you next week.